consumers are very clever nowadays. I mean, pretty much everybody out there has tried AR now. Wow effect that we were able to create, you know, back in the day in 2010 or whatever, you know, everybody was saying, oh my God, what is this? I've never seen it before. This is over. This is, you know, I mean, I don't want to say over. Many people still haven't seen it, but we're far beyond that now. It all comes down to the form factor. And the perfect form factor is of course this, you know, glasses. Glasses is the ultimate AR platform. You don't have to hold up a phone in front of you where you just see that little frame in front of you that kind of have to peek through, you know, with very limited field of view. The glasses ultimately is the form factor that we need for consumers to really adopt augmented reality. But we're still far away from seeing that, you know, happening because there's still so many technical issues.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the All Things XR podcast. In today's episode, I have Andy Gilstall. Hi, Andy.
Hey there. How are you today?
Thanks very much, Andy. How are you?
I'm excellent. Looking forward to the conversation.
Thanks very much. So, Andy, can you tell us a bit about yourself and your background?
Yeah, sure. So, I think it's fair to say that innovation has basically been the common theme for me over the past, I don't know, 20 years or so. You know, I've been very much into the XR industry probably for about 15, 16 years now. Yeah, we were very early back in the day with Wikitude, you know, one mm-hmm. of the first companies actually to come into this space. Well, at least on the mobile side of things, there were definitely other companies going into that earlier through other devices. Yeah, I mean, I'm originally from Germany. I was born and raised in Hamburg. From an early age on, I ventured internationally. I went to the United States, came back, then worked for a while in Hamburg. Very early on, also in the technology space, I was with AOL Time Warner back then. You know, one of the first internet providers. I don't know if you remember this or if they even were in Iran or you were part of the world, but. Yeah, so that was that. And then, later on, I shifted over to Asia. I moved to Singapore. I was working for EA at the time, you know, looking after business development and strategy topics in that part of the world. And then I was working for Lonely Planet. And that was actually the time when we experimented for the very first time with mobile augmented reality. Mm-hmm. And that's how I got exposed to this whole XR industry back then. Wikitude was the reason why I then moved to Salzburg, Austria. And I have been here since 2010. So I shifted my family from Asia to Salzburg, Austria, so back to Europe, if you will. And and then of course the journey with Wikitude began, and you know, with all of the ups and downs and the roller coaster that you go through with a startup. And now I have a little setup called Mixed Reality AI, where I help mm-hmm. Various companies with their AR, VR, you know, XR, 3D, and now also of course AI needs. So yeah, that's a little bit about me.
Awesome. So Andy, you were the CMO of Wikitude, and many people who joined the AR industry over the past few years may probably don't know about Wikitude, but it was one of the leading companies in the AR industry. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, this was a very interesting time of my life, and I think it was an interesting time for us as a company, certainly, because we were very early in the game. I remember, I mean, maybe I back up just a little bit before I talk about more about Wikitude, because I think the step before that is really interesting to kind of know, because I was living, as I said, I was living in Singapore, and I was working for Lonely Planet. And Lonely Planet, as some of you may know, is a travel publishing company. And, you know, of course, they have been writing books, have been publishing books, and many people around the world, especially in the English-speaking world, have you know, bought these books to learn about destinations and different, you know, places around the world to travel to. So from that perspective, you know, back in the day, we were thinking about like, okay, how can we build digital tour guides or, you know, apps, because this was around 2008, 2009, you know, this was when the iPhone just came out, you know, when smartphones had, you know, a digital compass, you know, a gyroscope, and of course, you know, a GPS sensor, which made these early versions of mobile augmented reality possible. So at that time, when I was at Lonely Planet, we actually got in touch with Philip, who is the original founder of Wikitude. And yeah, so because he posted this really cool video, maybe you've seen it. I think it says like, you know, millions or maybe half a million or whatever it is, about a very large number of views by now. This was in 2008, I think, and he was standing, you know, on the mountain here in Salzburg and holding up his, you know, what was it, the HTC Hero or the G1 by Google, I can't remember, but, you know, one of the very first Android phones that had these sensors inside. And he was experimenting with mobile augmented reality, and he kind of put this whole thing together. He was holding up his phone, you know, pointing at you know, some castles here in Salzburg, and basically, you know, telling the world, you know, what can be done with mobile augmented reality. And I saw this when I was in Singapore, and you know, one of my colleagues discovered the video, and then we, you know, we talked about it, and we. We're very fascinated. And of course, we thought, hey, you know, this would be so cool also to have something like this, you know, for Lonely Planet. And yeah, and so we hooked up with Philip and had some arrangements. And so that's how we got to know each other. And Philip and his small team at the time, you know, helped us on the Lonely Planet side to build, you know, the initial augmented reality apps for Lonely Planet, you know, tour guides for Paris, for London, for Tokyo, all these, you know, major cities. So we got to know each other through this relationship. And then at one day he asked me if I wanted to, you know, join Wikitude, and if, you know, I wanted to help him build this startup. And you know, at that time I had been in Asia for 6 years, and, you know, my daughter was around 7, you know, just about to get back into school. So I thought, okay, this is a great opportunity for us to, you know, to go back to Europe. And so we did. So we moved to Wikitude. Now back to your question, because, you know, that is really to me the most interesting, obviously personally to me, the most interesting bit of this whole story. But yeah, so then we started with Wikitude, and we were very much focused. Maybe you remember this. We're very much focused on, you know, building a you know, sort of like a world browser too. You know, like an augmented reality browser. You know, rather than, you know, an SDK or any sort of technology. So we started doing.
What's the hype back there?
Yes, exactly.
With Billy Parr being a unicorn and etc.
Yeah. So yeah, it was very exciting times, because we, you know, we thought we were really, you know, building something completely new in terms of an app and in terms of a platform. And yeah, so we aggregated all this content from all these different sources, obviously Wikipedia, and then also TripAdvisor and Lonely Planet and Yelp, and there were so many other location-based content sources that we, you know, made deals with, or used, you know, APIs through various ways to, you know, to populate the browser. And it was all fun and great. But it was really difficult for us at the time to figure out, like, how do we actually make money from this? Of course, the traffic was great. We had, I think, close to 30 million installs at one point, which was amazing. But still, you know, mobile advertising wasn't quite, you know, where it needed to be for us. And we, you know, experimented with premium content, and we did all kinds of different things, but we weren't really able to find, you know, the product market fit at the time to really show that, you know, we can find monetization and really make this a viable business proposition. So I think it was 2 years later, I think it must have been around maybe 2012 or so, which is when we completely pivoted the company in terms of, you know, what we wanted to do. And we shifted into focusing on, I think, what we were really, you know, best at the time, which was, you know, the technology itself, which we had really smart engineers, really smart people in our team, and, you know, capable of, you know, developing computer vision algorithms, computer vision technology that we could, you know, a package into a development kit, and then of course license it to app developers around the world. So that's what we did, and that's what you know, then started to build our business. We started with, you know, 2D image recognition and tracking, and then I think it was you know, some 3D object tracking, and we did then, you know, some SLAM obviously, and all these different approaches, you know, different algorithms for different use cases. And the business started to build and got bigger and bigger. And, you know, obviously we still went through a lot of ups and downs with, you know, with the startup. We were growing as a team, and then we had to kind of like decrease the team a little bit. And then we grew again, and then we expanded into the United States and did all sorts of things, you know, the usual things you do when you're a startup. And then, yeah. And then, of course, I mean, if you really fast forward, you know, of course, then I think it was more than 10 years after all of this began, you know, then, of course, Qualcomm acquired Wikitude. And now Wikitude, or the technology rather, and a lot of the people still are part of the Snapdragon Spaces API. And that's really, you know, that's really the nice conclusion to this. To this adventure that we all went through.
Mm-hmm. So Andy, for people, as I mentioned, who joined the AR space in the past few years may not remember, but it was Meta.io which got acquired by Apple. Wikitude and Vuforia were the biggest players.
Yes,
in the AR industry. And after the AR kit announcement, many things changed. Can you tell us about that era, how you faced this challenge in Wikitude and push forward?
Yeah, you're spot on there, because these were all of these announcements, you know, every time, you know, ARKit, you know, being mostly free, you know, to download, and then, you know, Meta.io's SDK, being around. And then, of course, there was, you know, other technologies, also, on top of this as well. So every time, you know, someone came out with something new, you know, it was competition. So we always try to obviously, get ahead, you know, develop features that would be, you know, useful to developers out there, would be better performing than, you know, some of these names that you mentioned. And it was, you know, this is part of the game. I mean, when you build a business, you have other people who are doing similar things, and they try to, you know, they try to compete with you. And that's what we did. And then, of course, I mean, the Meta.io announcement, obviously the Apple acquisition was special in a way because, well, on the one hand, it was, oh my God, now what? You know, now Apple is going to have all this technology and they're going to crush us. And what are we going to do now? And this and that. On the other hand, it was proof that what we were doing and what we were working on was something of great value. And it was something that, that, you know, that the big companies, saw and observed. So it was motivating on the one side, and it was also you know, it was also hard, because now we knew that Apple had all this great computer vision tech you know, within the organization. And then, of course, as you know, ARKit then became you know, essentially the product that was derived from the Meta.io acquisition. I mean, of course, they, you know, they did more to it, but that was probably the core of it. And so that was an interesting time, and a day I clearly remember sitting at my desk reading about the acquisition. It was a big day.
Yeah. I remember that day. So Andy, as you mentioned, Wikitude was working on an AR browser back in the day. It was Blipper, which became a unicorn back then. layer, exactly. And me and my company, Pandar, we were also building an AR browser based on Wikitude's tech. We are a premium partner of Wikitude. But, you know, the vision was an app to do all the AR things. But as we all know right now, the vision failed and none of the AR browsers made it. What's your analysis on that?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, so, you know, at the time, to me, the entire team, obviously, we had so many ideas about like how AR can be used, you know, to look or to point at objects, at things, at people, at places. And, you know, we had this vision, which you probably had with your company as well, that, you know, AR could be this universal new interface that could really stand on its own and become, you know, this new platform, really. And then, you know, as we found out the hard way, and this is why we pivoted, is that, back then, obviously the technology wasn't quite as good yet, not as accurate, you know, everything was GPS based. Exactly. So it was kind of like, that was another reason why it failed at the time. But I think, you know, when we look at like how augmented reality is being used today, it is more of a feature rather than it is a platform on its own. So it's being used in apps, you know, for certain things, you know, or it can also, you know, I mean, augmented reality can still be the center of, you know, specific, apps, but most of the time it's a feature. It's an add-on feature that helps, you know, maybe a map, you know, in Google Maps, you can have an AR view, but you don't need necessarily the AR view. So you can just look at the digital map. So it's a feature in that way. In the IKEA app, you know, you can look at your furniture and you can, you know, try your different, look at the different lamps or couches that you may want to buy. And then you have the AR view, so you can launch that and then you can place it into your living room. So it's a feature rather than, you know, an augmented reality browser that has the right to exist on its own. So it was a tough learning, and you learned it, and we learned it. And the analysis is that, you know, sometimes you find your product fit very quickly, and sometimes you don't. Sometimes you need a second iteration. And in this case, that's what we did.
Yeah, exactly. And Andy, let's get back to today. What gap did you see in the market that led you to found Mixed Reality IO?
Well, I mean, I don't see a gap, but I was very motivated, you know, to essentially provide, you know, all of this excitement that, you know, I lived through, you know, to kind of share this experience, you know, with other companies as well, and to share the knowledge and to share, because we've been, I mean, it's hard to, you could probably talk about this for hours, literally, you know, all the kinds of different, you know, augmented reality ideas that we had. I don't know if you know, but we also went through a thing called Wikitude Drive, which was an, you know, a navigation attempt, you know, an augmented reality navigation app. So that was one way. And then we, you know, we had the browser, we had then, of course, the SDK. We obviously discussed always, you know, like which kind of, you know, features should be part of the SDK and so forth. But, you know, mixed reality AI now is essentially, you know, my vehicle to, you know, to help companies who want to, you know, figure things out, you know, for their product, for their company, you know, how these technologies can be used for their particular setup. So I provide consulting, you know, I support companies through my time, providing time to them. In some cases, we also, you know, develop things for our clients. So we do prototypes mostly, you know, some MVPs. Often these sort of software development projects come out of discussions where, you know, the companies, you know, they have a certain idea and they want to test it internally, or they want to present it to, you know, to the executives, or they want to, you know, educate internally their team about something. So that's often the case when we build things. I mean, we've also built consumer facing apps and experiences, but I would say, you know, most 80% of the time we, you know, whatever we build never really is seen by anyone outside. And then, of course, we do, you know, we do 3D modeling for, I mean, needless to say, everything in XR is in three dimensions. So we have, you know, we have a lot of experience on that side. And then one of the things I'm actually increasingly doing more of is masterclasses. So I teach also, you know, at the local universities here. And I have some actually some very exciting projects on that front about to be announced as well. So masterclasses is also something that I enjoy a lot, you know, providing workshops to companies who want to dive deep into the topic and, you know, like a half day kind of a thing, or maybe sometimes even a full day. So those are basically the things that I offer now. But it all comes back to, you know, all these years of, you know, just being in the middle of it all. And, you know, with Wikitude being one of the pioneers in this space, and basically just taking that and bundling it into something that, you know, now I can still enjoy and provide these you know, services to other people. So that's what this is all about.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. So as we all know, right now most of AR adoption is still on the enterprise. And what do you think are the biggest challenges that prevented AR for being adopted by mainstream users?
Yeah. Well, it all comes down to the form factor, and the perfect form factor is of course this. You know, glasses. Mm-hmm. Glasses is the ultimate AR platform. You don't have to hold up a phone in front of you where you just see that little frame in front of you that you kind of have to peek through, you know, with very limited field of view. And obviously, you always need to hold your hands up, or one of your hands up. And it's a bit awkward. It's not very natural. I mean, I could, you know,
exactly.
We could talk about that forever, but let me just shift to the positive. I mean, the glasses ultimately is the form factor that we need for consumers to really adopt augmented reality. But we're still far away from seeing that, you know, happening, because there's still so many technical issues, you know, to provide a good consumer experience through this form factor, where it's not only, and of course today, which is, you know, the day when Meta announced the Ray-Ban display glasses. I mean, glasses with a monocular display, which is amazing. But of course, you and I and everybody in the industry knows that some people may call it augmented reality, but it really isn't. It is a display, yeah. Which is capable of showing content, you know, some notifications, some conversations, even some pictures, some videos and all that. But it's not content that tracks on the real physical world in front of you, let alone, you know, through a field of vision, you know, to be big enough that it really is capable of, you know, providing you a convincing immersive experience. So this problem has still not been solved, not by Meta, not by anyone else. It is sort of solved through the mixed reality headsets that we see, because, you know, these devices, like for example the Meta Quest 3 or S, you know, one of the latest devices, or the Apple Vision Pro, you know, they have these camera pass-through modes where you, of course, you know, look through displays that are, you know, within the headset, and you have cameras outside, and you look into the world. You know, through this sort of form factor, you can, you know, there's great augmented reality, although, you know, people call it mixed reality, but it's really augmented reality, because you have the real world and you're putting digital content on top of it, and it's basically on your entire, you know, field of view and your entire vision, and not just a small square in front of you, which is what most of the optical AR glasses provide today. So we sort of see, you know, where we're headed, but we have these two streams going in parallel right now, because the form factor of these mixed reality headsets is not something that you would put on walking down the street, obviously, because, you know, there were some videos of people, you know, doing this, but obviously that's, you know, ridiculous. It's not, and it's for many reasons, not something that, that people would do. But, you know, in theory, we know, you know, how augmented reality can work and what it can feel like. but we don't have the form factor to really make it available for mass adoption and for all of those people out there. So that's the issue. And hopefully these two streams at some stage in the not too distant future will merge. But I think it's still a few years at least out.
Thanks very much, Andy. And also, let's talk about Vision Pro. People in the industry had very big expectations of it. But again, some people call it a flop. I don't think so. But it didn't hold up to the expectations. What do you think about that? What's your analysis on this?
Yeah, that's also interesting. First of all, it's an amazing device. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. From what they achieved, from a technology perspective, from an experience perspective, from a fidelity perspective, it is simply an amazing product. But having said that, it also, over here in Europe, it's around 4,000 euros, which is obviously crazy mm-hmm. expensive. So, it's not a mass consumer product that you would just buy buy someone for Christmas or that sort of thing. So it's from a pricing perspective, that's a big problem. The other thing is that it was positioned as a consumer product, but when you look into the market and who's really using it, it's mostly enterprise, actually, mostly companies are using it. So it's a bit of an awkward situation with all the marketing. I mean, not all the marketing, but a lot of the marketing initially, for sure, primarily targeted at consumers with videos and with playful things and whatnot. And now you slowly see more and more marketing also going in the enterprise direction from Apple's side. So that's interesting. I'm excited about the next iteration. There's rumors, maybe next year, maybe it's going to take another year until 27. I don't know. But there's definitely more to come. And of course, I don't need to tell you that, Tim Cook is a huge fan of augmented reality. And I don't know. I mean, my interpretation is that, he wants to, I don't know. I'm just obviously, making this up, but he might be thinking, this is really his product category that he opened up. It's his legacy.
Exactly.
And I think he laid the groundwork for this product to be iterated going forward. I think we're going to see many more iterations of this. I think we're also going to see Apple obviously going into the glasses space. Yeah, I mean, I read the headlines too. Some people call it a flop, and it is a flop. Define a flop, low numbers of products sold. The numbers are, when you speak in terms of Apple and the numbers of iPhones and iPads and AirPods and these kinds of products, how many millions if not billions of times mm-hmm. these products have been sold? Yeah, the Apple Vision Pro has not been sold much at all, so the numbers are extremely low compared to that. But I still think it's it's the first iteration. It's version one. The first iPhone wasn't as successful, but
exactly.
But on the other hand, whatever happened in the past, it doesn't mean that it's gonna the same thing is gonna happen for this product. So I'm not suggesting that it's the same pattern or it's the same type of development curve. I don't think it is, but I'm just saying that I think Apple is in it for the long term, and I don't think that they're going to scrap it because the last couple of years have not shown the numbers that they were expecting.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And Andy, let's talk about AI. Sure. How do you see AI helping AR's progress and adoption, especially in content generation and with today's models that can create world models or converting images to 3D models and et cetera? How do you see AI can help AR?
Yeah, that is so interesting. And I've been playing around with these different platforms, of course. I mean, first of all, I mean, the first point on this that I touched on, obviously, the smart glasses that we see now have a little bit of AR, and they have obviously AI, which makes it even more compelling. So that's that little thing that is just kind of like progressing this whole relationship between the two. But you touched on another point, which is content creation, which is also extremely interesting. When you can take images now and upload them and say, okay, you know, make a 3D world out of this. That is so powerful for content creators if you can do that sort of thing. I mentioned also that we provide, you know, 3D modeling services to our customers. And of course, now we also look at these different tools that are out there where you can sometimes, you know, use AI and help you get started. I mean, usually I think the state of the industry that we're in terms of, you know, 3D model or 3D object creation with AI is pretty, you know, is at a very early stage at the moment. So you can say, okay, I want to create, you know, I don't know, a little cat or a little, you know, or a character, you know, like a, I don't know, like a soldier, or maybe you can say, I want, you know, a car, I want this, I want that. And it works, and you can get some fairly low poly, 3D content. And it's great if your project allows for that sort of simplicity, or, you know, if you don't need any like super sophisticated characters, then this is great. And it can also help you to sort of like iterate maybe different ideas, and just experiment. So what we found is that you can create great content, but usually it's not quite there yet. We always have to take whatever we create with AI and then modify it and optimize it. Maybe it's for web AR, or maybe it's something where you need to just decrease the poly count and the textures, and you have to, you know, still do some touch-ups, or maybe even the style. You know, maybe there's some little artifacts, or maybe the textures don't quite work with the mesh, or the animation that was created with AI is not exactly what you were looking for. You know what I mean? So it's not quite there yet. And I think, you know, I think this was also the case maybe 2-3 years ago with ChatGPT. You know, when you were asking it for maybe some text or maybe some images, you know, then you see, I don't know, hands with six fingers, or you see, you know, all these kind of weird things happening. And I think this is what's happening in 3D right now too. I mean, clearly the road ahead is that you know, through prompting, or through, you know, referencing other images or whatever, you will be able to create 3D worlds, 3D objects, you know, for augmented reality purposes, for mixed reality purposes, 100%. I don't know, 1 year from now, two years, 3 years, I don't know how long it's going to take, but it's only getting better from here. And I think more and more of 3D content creation will be done with AR, no doubt.
Exactly. And what's your take on digital twins? And again, AI helping AR in this matter with technologies like NeRFs and 3D Gaussian splattings?
Yeah, it's... You know, we've been experimenting lately a lot with Gaussian splatting, and it's just incredible what you can achieve with these technologies. You mentioned NeRF, you mentioned photogrammetry. I mean, we've been doing a lot of scanning of, you know, statues, and, you know, mostly, you know, things in the museum space or in the, you know, cultural space, where, you know, different buildings, different objects and whatnot. And of course, you know, I remember, I don't know, just a few years back, you know, photogrammetry was really the best technology, the best solution to create these digital twins. You know, I would run around, or, you know, someone in my team would run around with a camera, take photos, as many photos as possible from all sides and angles of a statue, that sort of thing. And then run it through, you know, some stitching software, and then create something that you could use. And it worked great. But then you would still need to, you know, optimize it for different platforms. Let's say you want to run it in a browser, so it can't be that big. It has to be performant, and blah, blah, blah. So you have all these issues. And yeah, and Nerf, you know, sort of like, you know, helped in some ways, you know, for certain things. But then this Gaussian splatting now is just really incredible that you can, I don't know, scan the interior of a church, of a museum, or, you know, or an object, you know, with your phone. And then you render it and you can, I don't know, with 30 megabytes, you know, in your browser, you have a full scale model that you can navigate through with your mouse and is super, super performant. And, yeah. And I think also, Mark Zuckerberg just the other day, he was also talking about his, I forget the name of the app Hyper. What's it called? Hyper. Anyway, but he was also, touching on, you know, the ability of, you know, scanning rooms with your Quest headset, and you know, being able to you know, create models, digital twins of rooms and objects, and yeah. So when you have these, you know, super performant technologies like Gaussian splats, then this whole process becomes so easy, and anybody can do it, and you don't have to, you know, get like super highly sophisticated software, or you don't need super, you don't need that much knowledge or experience to create these kinds of things. So that's amazing that this is possible now, and maybe we'll see even, you know, more powerful technologies coming forward. But right now, 3D Gaussian splats to me is for most use cases that we work with is definitely the technology to use.
Yeah, exactly. And Andy, as a mentor and advisor, what common mistakes do you see AR, VR startups making or enterprises that try to adopt AR?
Oh, what mistakes? Jesus. I mean, there have been so many over the years. I mean, I always say, and it took me, and to be honest, it took me a while to learn this too. You know, back in the day when I was in Singapore and I saw this for the first time, I thought, oh my God, you know, this is so easy. This is so easy to understand. You know, how you just hold up your phone at everything, at everyone, and it'll just provide you with all this information. Easy, right? Yeah, it all makes sense.
Yeah.
But then after a while, you also realize that, you know, not every AR app makes sense. There are some things where the technology can shine. It really provides value. I've mentioned some of them. But there are also some where it's just completely useless. I mean, oftentimes, augmented reality, let's say for navigation, can be useful if the hardware is right and if the UI is right. But sometimes, you know, a digital map looking down for a second might be better, you know, in some use cases. But if, you know, like I said, but if navigation was on your AR glasses, and it would be very subtle, you know, and it would be, implemented very smoothly into your experience, then it can shine there. So you have to really look carefully at what you're trying to achieve, and then really ask yourself the question, is this really providing value to the user,
or exactly,
is it a gimmick, or is it a is it a way of maybe getting more attention? But consumers are very clever nowadays. I mean, pretty much everybody out there has tried AR now. So, you know, that wow effect that we were able to create, you know, back in the day in 2010 or whatever, you know, everybody would say, oh my God, what is this? I've never seen it before. This is over. This is, you know, I mean, I don't want to say over. Many people still haven't seen it, but we're far beyond that now. So you really, I always tell people, talk to me, you know, let's talk for, I don't know, half an hour, and let me be your sparring partner, and let's talk through your ideas, and then let's figure out if what you're doing or what you're planning or envisioning maybe has been done maybe 100 times before by other companies who have made a mistake, you know, trying to accomplish something else, or maybe there is something completely different or new that you're trying to achieve. And let's see, based on the experience that we've made in the past, you know, whether or not this could actually work. And if so, then how is it best implemented? Yeah, that's my advice. Don't just run, but take a few moments in between to kind of pause and really make sure that you're on the right path. Especially, I mean, it's so easy to iterate nowadays, right? I mean, back then you would have to build and spend hours and hours. Now you can just upload a 3D model into some platform and boom, and you see a result. So you don't have to spend that much money anymore in order to test something. And that's what you should do, because it's so easily done nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And Andy, if you were to start a startup today in AR, VR, or AI, what field, vertical, or technology would you use for that, or idea?
Yeah. I just think, I mean, the times of creating core technology obviously are over, pretty much. I mean, I don't want to say over. There's always a niche probably somewhere to create, some kind of cool new algorithm from a computer vision perspective. But, we've now obviously progressed. This industry has matured, from a content perspective. There have been many tools provided, obviously, to all the social media companies, and Snap being still the platform that is pushing augmented reality very much, but I think now is probably the time, because AR for glasses is still at its infancy, because there are some glasses out there that you can buy and you can experiment with them and you can prototype things and so forth, but now we have this AI component, and I think that's where a lot of stuff is going to happen. I think a lot of different mm-hmm. applications. I mean, you now see that, Meta and, you see, Android XR, providing APIs, providing SDKs, ways for other people to develop their own stuff, to develop their own apps, their own experiences. I think that's super interesting. And if that's, if you have a long-term vision for augmented reality on glasses, I think now is probably a good time to get into it, even though we don't quite have any devices out there in the market yet that are out there in the millions and billions, but we have devices that you can start working on. And you have the big players, you have Google and you have Meta and you have Apple, and you have Snap, you have Amazon, you have all these companies working on hardware. So hardware and core technology, those days are over. But now, I think on this form factor, creating convincing experiences, use cases, apps, games, I don't know, just from a content perspective, I think there's a lot to be done going forward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Awesome. And Andy, as our last question, what's your pragmatic vision in 2035 of AR?
Okay, 2035?
Yeah. 10 years into the future.
Years. Yeah. I think in 10 years, we will actually have augmented reality glasses that will provide a compelling experience in a form factor, similar to something like this, very slim, very light, easy to wear, fashionable. Just look at, the Meta Ray-Bans with the monocular display. This is step number one. We've seen devices like this for more than 10 years. I mean, this is not new, but now there's a big company, the biggest investing company in the world who's put like tens of billions of dollars into this space and not stopping or not slowing down in any way, but even probably increasing investment yeah. going forward. So in 2035, I think we will have glasses that are binocular, both eyes, with the ability to provide immersive experiences and not just little displays, notifications, pictures, videos, but actually being able to put content on top of your physical world around you, mm-hmm. and merging really the real and the virtual. I think 10 years, I'm pretty confident that that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And Andy, where can our listeners reach out and contact you?
Yeah, I mean, obviously on Mixed Reality AI. So it's mixed-reality.ai. Or of course, you can always ping me on LinkedIn. I'm easy to find on LinkedIn. So yeah, contact me anytime. I'm looking forward to meeting anyone who's interested in this space.
Mm-hmm. We're sure to put links on the description of the podcast. Well, Andy, it was great having you on the All Things XR podcast.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very, very much.
Yeah, thank you also. This was good fun. Thank you.
Thanks very much.